This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Brett Kilborn at the United Telecom Council. Welcome back to Utopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thanks, Mark. Always a pleasure.
I got a newsletter from your organization a little while ago with a lot of exciting news on the BPL and FCC front. I thought maybe we'd just talk a little bit about those with an emphasis on what it means for BPL.
Yep. A couple of different things that are going on. Generally, the FCC has been deregulating broadband networks. They went all the way to the Supreme Court fighting to deregulate cable modem and won. And then the commission just came, or excuse me, adopted rules that would do the same thing for generally wireline broadband internet access platforms, primarily DSL, but also potentially BPL.
Okay, and in fact, specifically the term of art deregulate, what does that essentially amount to in practice?
They're classifying those networks as information services, so they're not subject to common carrier requirements that would ordinarily apply.
And what were some of those? What were some of those common carrier requirements? That are there any common carriers left when the main ones have been declared information services?
Only to the extent that they're actually offering broadband, are they information services? So that if the Bell companies, for example, to the extent that they're still offering traditional public service telephone network services to customers, they're still a common carrier.
So that part of their operation, which involves essentially circuit-switched telephone service, is still a common carrier.
That's right.
And subject to that regulation.
That's right.
Just sort of jumping ahead here, what if they offer voice over IP over their deregulated information service DSL or cable modem?
Yeah, I mean, that's where it gets interesting. And, you have to, ride voice over IP over a broadband connection, too. So presumably, and the commission has done this almost in every case, they've treated voice over IP as an information service.
Which means that if you're a phone company and you're offering
PSTN.
A PSTN, then in a circuit-switched way, and that's regulated, and you have a DSL capability that could carry voice over IP as an information service that's not regulated, and it's technically superior, how long is it going to take you until all of your traffic is switched to voice over, all of your voice traffic becomes voice over IP?
Well, they'd still have to get the consumer to buy broadband, so that will blunt some of that.
But, of course, they have advertising and marketing strategies at their... their control.
No, I think that's definitely the direction that the telephone traffic is taking. It's all becoming digital, and it's becoming compressed, and most likely it will be voice over IP in the very near future.
Okay, and so what does this imply for BPL?
The same logic that applies to DSL would naturally apply to BPL, that they would not be subject to any kind of common carrier regulations. One of the things the FCC is concerned about is something you touched on. To the extent that your incumbent networks all of a sudden become deregulated, what's the impact on universal service? So commission is trying to come up with ways to preserve universal service so that for an interim period, it looks like commission is going to require those broadband providers to contribute to universal service.
And universal service is, again, what does that mean in practice?
It's a subsidy program that takes a certain percentage of the overall gross revenues from a carrier and puts it into a pool that then other carriers that are providing service in rural and high-cost areas and telemedicine, those kind of social, socioeconomic policies, those carriers that are, furthering those socioeconomic policies can draw out of that pool.
Are those fees based on the what we're essentially calling the legacy voice traffic?
Yes.
Is DSL subject to those universal service fees now?
Yes, I believe they are. I think that was one of the reasons the FCC specifically said that they would continue to have to pay.
But apparently, is that on an ongoing basis or just a transitional arrangement?
At this point, it looks like it's transitional. So
And it, what it's
we're waiting for the text to come out, and we'll see exactly what it says and who it applies to. So I got to put that caveat in there.
Right. So it could transition to a state where the phone companies are, if they switch their voice traffic to voice over IP, and the universal service doesn't apply to information services, that they'll be they'll be relieved of that obligation as well.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to go in that direction. Okay. I mean, I think generally the FCC is trying to get away from legacy regulations to the extent that it can.
Okay.
That's just one of those ones
right.
where it's a little concerned about what the impact would be
right.
in terms of overall access.
Now, what does this do for the competitive position of BPL, if anything? Two or four, the BPL
position?
Oh, I think
it's going to be a good thing for broadband in general, and BPL will broaden those coattails.
Okay. Will it give the phone companies and the cable companies even more of a financial advantage, so they can perhaps lower their rates in competition when BPL comes in as a third way in?
The DSL part of the service, I think that they've had pricing flexibility on that already, so that's not been quite the concern in terms of the common carrier regulations that
right.
now would no longer apply. It's the open access issues that they were concerned about.
And the open access doesn't apply to BPL because it's its own plant.
Right.
Okay.
And that's why it's not going to affect BPL quite as much from a competitive standpoint. But those independent ISPs that were using DSL networks, on a wholesale basis, they have a one-year transition period, but after that, they're on their own.
Okay. Now, has it been the general approach of BPL Internet Access that the utilities were going to provide the Internet administration themselves or outsource it to ISPs?
Generally speaking, yeah. The utility companies are looking at a wholesale model. So, when the Brand X decision came out of the Supreme Court that announced that cable modems and information service, our press release said that the ISPs and CLECs that lost that battle, come aboard. I think that it represents an opportunity for those folks to ride on a BPL network.
So you're saying that unlike the cable companies that went to the Supreme Court to say they shouldn't have to let ISPs use their networks, BPL is eager to let ISPs use their
network. Yeah, it's not a requirement. It's just,
right.
We just have a different mindset.
and your mindset would include that. So if I were a small ISP locked out by the phone companies through the FCC and from the cable companies by the Supreme Court, it would make sense to look to BPL as a third way back into business.
Right. In fact, some of them are. Earthlink is one of the ones that's really involved in BPL right now.
Okay. You want to say anything more about the Earthlink's involvement in BPL?
Not specifically. I mean, they're involved in Con Ed. They're also they were involved in Progress Energy.
Good. Okay. Now, another item on your newsletter talks about the CALEA, otherwise known as the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, CALEA or CALEA. Tell us what that is.
Sure. It was a statute that was written quite a while ago, before the days really of broadband. There was some DSL at that point, that requires telecom carriers to facilitate wiretaps and traces.
And a facilitate essentially means two things: having a technology that's amenable to that and providing access when under suitable jurisdiction to allow the
right.
authorities to do that.
Yeah, I mean, there was always the requirement that if law enforcement came to a carrier and hit them with a subpoena, that they had to comply with it.
Right.
This just makes it a requirement that their networks be enabled so that they can do that more quickly.
Does this have anything to do with the old carnivore approach? Or?
No, this is pre-carnivore. But there's, a concern that this is carnivore reborn. But it's something that, a statute that was written a long time ago for telecom networks
right.
is now being used and expanded to apply to what we're already calling now information services.
Right. So, and in fact, it's the Federal Communications Commission is saying that the provisions in the CALEA Act that require telecommunications carriers to comply with it need to apply to those networks that have just been declared by the Supreme Court and the FCC to be information networks and not telecommunications networks.
Right. And
does that make much sense, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, there's a contradiction there, but you know, fortunately for the FCC, there's a narrow provision within the statute that allows the FCC to apply CALEA to providers that offer services that are a substantial replacement for the local exchange. That's the way that the statute reads. And the FCC has said because because broadband provides the same functionality as telecommunications, therefore they need to comply.
So you're saying that the information network provides the functionality of a telecommunications network, and therefore CALEA ought to apply, even though on the grounds that it's an information network and not a telecommunications network, it ought to be deregulated.
Right. It's, you know, I don't want to get into defending it. It's obviously a stretched argument, but the bottom line here is that nobody wants a loophole in national security.
Right.
And to the extent that we already discussed, traffic is to an increasing extent being carried on digital networks. So the FBI has to do something, and the FCC is doing what it can to prevent that loophole from becoming a big loophole.
Okay. What does this mean for BPL? Is the technology ready to be hooked up under CALEA, or would you rather it not be either on technical or commercial or other grounds?
Yeah, we're still working. I mean, all the broadband providers, for example, are struggling with the technical requirements of actually becoming quote-unquote CALEA compliant.
Right. Is there an agency? Does NIST or someone set a standard for CALEA? Does the agency itself have the technical resources? Are there specs? Are they public? What a network has to do? Is it a standard and the functionality can be delivered however they want, or does it have to? What's the picture on that? Do you know?
There are standards that were developed for telecom networks.
Right. You mean legacy circuit switch telephones.
Right. And so,
networks.
To answer your question, there are standards. Now, the question is, how much of that can you actually use for a broadband network?
Are those standards publicly accessible?
Yeah. I'm struggling. It's been years since I had to look at that. It's J standard or something like that.
What I'm essentially asking is whether some sort of research and development project is going to be necessary to involving both engineers and lawyers to figure out how to make legislation that was passed in the legacy era apply to an integrated broadband world.
If somebody wanted to go down that path, they could. At this point, the industry is doing what it can, the broadband industry, to come up with, standards that are developed based on the specifics of each platform. So, cable's done, something already that the FBI has cited as, something that would be quote-unquote CALEA compliant.
Right.
But it's still just a standard. It's not necessarily something that, that they've implemented.
Is it the FBI that's in charge of declaring a network a CALEA compliant, or the FCC?
It's the FBI, I think, that actually issued the press statement, concerning the Cable Lab standard, which is what we're talking around here.
Okay, and again, what's the UTC BPL position on whether CALEA ought to apply to it, and what are the supporting reasons for that?
BPL? Well, we argued against applying it to BPL for a couple of reasons. Number one, we sort of agreed with the ISPs that this is clearly outside of the statute generally.
Right.
But one of the other arguments we made was that, implementing CALEA is going to be, as a practical matter, easier for the cable and DSL incumbents because they have a very large customer base to aggregate those costs across. So,
meaning commercially more feasible, but not
right.
Necessarily. What about the comparison of the technical difficulty between those two systems and BPL? Are they comparable, or is BPL easier or harder to make?
I'm not qualified to answer the question. I'll have to punt on that one.
Okay.
But certainly from a cost standpoint, intrinsically,
right.
The incumbents have an advantage, and
right.
They certainly pass those costs along. We don't.
Right.
And I think that's resonated. I'm interested to see what the decision will actually say
right.
when it comes to BPL, because one of the things in the rules that were adopted, the news release, it mentions that the FCC is initiating a further rulemaking on whether CLIA should apply to small providers and rural carriers, rural providers of both VoIP and broadband.
Okay. Well, let's move out of Washington and head down to Texas,
sure.
Where a bill called SB5 passed, I guess, Wednesday night would be yesterday. And it, you say in the newsletter, it provides various incentives for utilities to implement broadband over power line technology. How important was this bill in the national BPL picture, and what specifically does this legislation provide for?
Yeah, I think it's pretty important. It's not something that's a preconditioned for going out and rolling out. Let's
right.
say that at the outset. You know, but it certainly provides a green light for the utility companies that might be thinking about providing BPL in the state of Texas. And it does that in a couple of different ways. Number one, it says that they can recover some of the operational and capital expenditures associated with the BPL rollout.
Right.
That's pretty big. But number two, it says that, you know, it's completely up to the utility company whether it wants to offer this service. It has to do it through an affiliate or a non-affiliate.
What would be the difference between an affiliate or a non-affiliate?
Whether the company that's actually providing service to the end user has some relationship with the utility or not.
So you mean owned by the same holding company that owns the utility, for example?
Right. So it actually clarifies that the, you know, the electric utility can hold an interest in the affiliate.
Oh, okay.
But... you know, once it does contract with a third party, essentially, to provide service,
right?
That party has discretion as to which ISPs it wants to work with, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And it also provides some clarification as to, you know, what the fees are going to be in terms of the use of the infrastructure, you know, whether there's going to be a fee that the utility company pays to the BPL operator for the use of the network for utility apps. But overall, I mean, at the outset, what it says in the preamble is that they find that BPL is in the public interest, that utility companies, you know, the BPL rollout is dependent upon the utility companies, and, you know, they're trying to find ways, essentially, to encourage utility companies to do this.
Okay.
But they're not going to require them to do it.
Right. Now, if I understood it correctly, the state of Kansas... Nebraska passed a bill a few weeks ago that prohibited municipal broadband on the part of cities and utilities, if I understood that correctly. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
This is that Nebraska bill essentially prohibited BPL in Nebraska, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
All right. Now, here on a pretty nearby state, they've taken the opposite tack. And it's the state where SBC is headquartered. How do you account politically for that difference in the laboratories of the states experimenting with different approaches to BPL? One giving it the state's approval, and one prohibiting it.
Yeah, the interesting thing there is that in Nebraska, the restriction is against muni broadband.
Right, but I think all the
utilities. BPL and otherwise.
Does it apply? Are most of the utilities publicly owned?
Yes,
and I think they're subject to the prohibition as well, aren't they?
In Nebraska.
In Nebraska, right?
Right. Yes.
Right.
And you know, they tried. Actually, there was a bill introduced in Texas.
Right.
While the legislature was in session, that would have also restricted muni broadband there as well.
Right.
And with some exceptions for BPL. But that bill failed in Texas. They do have restrictions on the telecom side. But, there are some similarities, even though there are some, what you're pointing out is differences between these two states. When it comes to muni broadband, there are some similarities there.
So are most of the utilities in Texas private or public?
There are many public. When you say most, I mean.
Well, so what's the proportion of public and private ownership of utilities in Texas?
You know, again, I'd like to punt on that because I'm sure that there are numerous munis within the state of Texas. I just don't know the exact number. There are only about three main investor-owned utility companies in Texas.
Could that have made some difference in the picture there? Because
but, I mean, the investor-owned serve the vast majority of the customers.
Oh, okay.
You know, but in terms of the number of companies, yeah, I'm pretty sure that the munis outnumber the.
Oh, okay, but the number of customers and the size
yeah.
Is the preponderance is privately investor-owned.
Yeah.
Could before we wrap up, could you sort of comment on the current state of play between BPL and Muni Broadband, especially in light of legislation that's pending from Senator Ensign that, as far as I understand it, would prohibit municipal broadband, and legislation pending from Senators Lautenberg and McCain that would legalize it?
Yeah, the McCain-Lautenberg bill was actually introduced before the Ensign bill.
Right.
And it was actually in response to a bill that was introduced by Sessions. Texas.
Right,
H.R. 27. Bill is the one that would actually prohibit broadband.
Right, H.R. 2726.
Yeah, and then the McCain-Lautenberg bill would have amended the Section 707, the Advanced Services Provision within the Communications Act, to preempt any kind of state prohibitions on muni broadband. So, you know, they are mirror images of each other. The Ensign bill doesn't necessarily prohibit muni broadband, but it does put it through a lot of hoops that may have the practical effect of prohibiting muni broadband.
Now, I understand that Senator McCain is a co-sponsor of the Ensign bill, as well as a co-sponsor of the Lautenberg-McCain bill, which would mean he'd be in his usual middle-of-the-road, tipping the balance, making the decision position as usual, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, even the bill that he introduced has non-discrimination requirements within it. So that may be where he sees commonality.
Well, what does the non-discrimination amount to in terms of BPL and muni broadband?
Well, one of the fear, you know, issues that is often raised with municipals getting into the business is that they could conceivably discriminate in favor of their own affiliate.
Right. It's my understanding that the McCain-Lautenberg bill prohibits that.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. That's a non-discrimination requirement.
Oh, I see. Okay. So they're allowed to do it, but they can't discriminate against their private competitors.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're not allowed to discriminate in favor of their public provider.
Right.
But, conceivably he could see some kind of consistency with the way that the Ensign bill is written, which is, you know, it's perfectly fine for a muni to go into the business, but then they have to put out public notice, they have to provide right of first refusal,
and
some additional requirements beyond that.
What are you saying about the right of first refusal? Because that's what the House Bill 30 in Pennsylvania required of municipalities, and that was seen as a muni broadband destroyer. And Philadelphia got a waiver from SBC on the basis of grassroots opposition to it, but it applies to the rest of the state, where right of first refusal means that they have to go to the Verizon and ask them to build whatever they want first, and if they want to build it, they can, and then then they can't. So.
That's right. Actually, in this case, it's whatever they, it's not whatever they want. They have to actually come in with a bid that wins.
Right.
And if the interesting thing in the Ensign bill is if there's a tie, then the tie goes to the incumbent. So
A tie, you mean in terms of the selection, the bid?
Right. It has to be decided by some neutral third party
right.
who wins. The interesting thing there is that if the neutral third party finds that the public provider wins, even after that point, that the network that they build will be subject to open access by the incumbent. So
subject to open access by the incumbent?
Yes.
You mean the incumbent that's gone to the Supreme Court and the FCC to make sure that there's no access to its networks from other people, other companies?
Yes.
All
well,
right.
It's different, you know. That's publicly funded infrastructure.
Oh, it's publicly
funded
infrastructure. I see. Okay. Finally, what's the position? Where does BPL stand as a muni broadband technology compared to Wi-Fi at the moment? Or WiMAX wireless technologies in general? Is there much movement? Especially, I guess, in terms of, for example, cities like Los Angeles, where the public where the utility company is owned by the city.
Right. They're using wireless at this point, I'm pretty sure. But they're also looking into BPL. I mean, BPL is a tool.
Right.
It can be used in combination with wireless, and it is actually being used in combination with wireless.
Apropos of that, could you say a little bit about the Motorola Powerline LV system and whether that counts as BPL and how that works and how that might figure into the future?
Sure. Motorola's product is entirely low-voltage BPL.
Right.
Which means that they take a wireless signal, run it to the pole.
By run it, you mean send it wirelessly.
Send it wirelessly
right.
to a, you know, it's called canopy.
Right.
That canopy device then routes the signal onto the low voltage line that runs from the pole to the house. So they are using BPL, you know, for about 100 feet into the house.
Right.
It gets around the transformer issue. That's one of the issues. And also, the amateurs like it because it uses the home plug standard, which, you know, notches out the ham bands.
Have you seen that in operation yet? Does Motorola have any customers for that you know of yet?
One of which is Broad River Energy. They, when Motorola announced that they were getting into this space, Broad River Energy, which is part of, I think, New Horizons, Broad River Electric, excuse me, announced that they were in negotiations at that point to deploy Motorola's device.
Do you know if it's up and running yet, or they're still negotiating?
I think they're still negotiating.
Okay. All right, good. All right, I want to thank you for bringing us up to date on some of the developments and some of the contradictions that are now abounding in the BPL, Muni Broadband, deregulatory space, and say I hope we can talk again as the situation becomes even more complicated in the future.
No problem.
Thanks very much.
Anytime, Mark.
Bye.
See you.
Bye.